Welcome to the Short Term Show, the show about short-term rentals and long-term wealth, with real property owners hosting real properties who are crushing it in the vacation and short-term rental space. And here's your host, Avery Carl.
Join me live every Thursday for a weekly Q&A all about short-term rentals. If you like my vibe, if you're digging the long hair extraordinaire Cashflow Carl and want to ask me questions in real time, join me at strquestions.com. It's a lot of fun. strquestions.com.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Short Term Show. I realized recently that in all the episodes that we've done, all the downloads and all the listens that you guys have given us, we have never had a wholesaler on. And I think a lot of you have a lot of questions about what exactly that is. So we decided we would start at the very top of the wholesaling world and just not mess around. So we have Jamil Damji. He has the number one wholesale company in the entire country. Jamil, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me, Avery. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, super, super excited to interview you. So can you start off by just telling us a little bit about yourself? Because I would imagine most of our listeners are pretty aware of you. You're pretty difficult to miss out there online and on TV. But tell us a little about yourself.
Sure. Well, I'm a real estate wholesaler, as you've described. Been in the business for over 20 years. I self-taught. So, you know, unfortunately, I wish I had had a little bit of help. But the fact that I had to kind of figure out the wholesale business model by myself, let me have my own ideas on how to operate. And I think that's why I do it a little bit differently than the traditional ways that wholesalers have been taught to operate. And so, you know, I did my first deal in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, born in the United States, but grew up in Canada. And so I was walking a neighborhood that I lived in, and there was a rental house that hadn't been sold in, hadn't been rented in a few months. And I had overheard a conversation these builders were having about needing a property just like that so they could bulldoze it and create this luxury duplex. And I called the homeowner and just asked if they'd be interested in selling it instead of renting it, considering they hadn't had any luck yet. And a very clear answer came from that homeowner. And she said she would take $350,000 for the house. And I scurry over to my developer friends and ask them what they'll pay. And they say $400,000. So I'm having this $50,000 problem that I need to solve because I don't have the money. Right? I don't have $350,000 to make this happen. So I try everything you would think of at first, right? I go to family and I say, hey, can anybody lend this to me? It'll just be for a matter of a few days. I've got this home I can buy for $350,000. I can sell it to these guys for $400,000. I can get deposits and things to secure everybody, but I don't have the $350,000. And nobody wanted to give me any money. You know, like there was, and the ones who did have the money, they were looking at me like, dude, you're just fresh out of college. Like this is not something that you're really interested in or doing, or have any experience doing. This could go wrong. And I think I'm going to pass. And rightfully so. If somebody had come to me and it was their first deal and asked me for $350,000, although I've done that now in my transactional funding company, back then, without any experience or without knowing what to do, I probably would have said no as well. So I start cold calling real estate attorneys, and I get to the letter S. The attorney's name was David Steed. He was really fresh out of law school, so he didn't have a legal secretary answering his phone. He just answered. And I went right into my pitch. I asked him if he had any idea on how I could solve the problem. And he did. In Canada, the process is called a skip transfer. And that's when you have two contracts that are mostly identical. The only differences between them are is that on one contract, you are the buyer, and you have to have this clause at your buyer name called and or nominee or and or assignee. And then on the second contract, you are the seller. Now, the only other things that'll change on those two contracts is you'll be purchasing one property at the price that you've agreed upon with your seller. And then when you're selling it at the higher price. So the difference between the two contracts is what you make as a fee. Now, I was shocked that this is how it worked. And so I do this. I go and lock this house up at $350,000. The seller is super happy because that's the price she wanted. I sell it to these developers for $400,000. I take the contracts to David, and a couple of weeks later, after he did all of the title searches and you know did all the took care of all the liens, the property conveyed, and I had $47,000 in change waiting for me in a cashier's check at his office. And the light bulbs went off, because you know I grew up in a circumstance where making that kind of money was impossible, right? So all of the gates in my mind of limiting thoughts of how much you can actually make in life started to shatter. And I went all in. I started scouring the newspapers for rental properties, because I saw that's how I got my first deal, was calling houses that were for rent. But I would usually call on the fourth and fifth of the month because they were unsuccessful in renting their property the month prior. And so I was like trying to gauge the psychology of this landlord early on, before I ever even knew of these strategies. I was just thinking what common sense would do. And it all worked. And then I graduated from doing this in the single family space to multifamily apartment buildings. I just saw wherever there was an opportunity for money to be made, so a potential project. And that's what wholesaling is, right? We sell potential. If I'm looking at a home that has that's in distressed condition and requires a full renovation, well, a retail buyer isn't likely going to buy that. And it's maybe not even going to be financeable by a traditional bank. So a cash investor is the solution for that type of property. Okay, but what are they going to do with it? Well, they're going to make a financial investment in hopes of making a profit. That's what would entice a cash investor into purchasing a home of that type, right? Because they have to do work to it. Nobody just does this for free. And so I found that if you could find an opportunity for potential to be created, then there was an opportunity for you to sell that to somebody else for a profit. And I've been very successful in doing that now. And we have real estate franchises. Our Keeg Lee is the name of my company. We're franchised in over 180 markets across the United States. I've been fortunate to have done a deal in almost every major city in the U.S. I don't think I've done something in Alaska yet. That's like, you know, my one caveat. I've transacted in Hawaii, which is cool. But everywhere else has been, fairly easy for us to get virtual deals done. And I'm grateful for the business model. I'm doing my best to try to elevate the narrative around it, because I do understand that there have been some interesting players at the table over the past years, and things haven't necessarily been done the way that they should be. And so the way that I do it, the way that I teach it, and the way that I feel about it have a lot of ethical conversations woven into it, so that we bring ethics to the world of wholesaling, so that you become an instrumental part or piece of the real estate agent's world, a seller's world, and a potential fix and flip investor or buy and hold investor. To be able to be somewhat of a partner to them.
Well, that's a lot to unpack. And I think that, I mean, not just wholesaling, real estate agents, I mean, anybody, lenders in the space, ethics really is important. And I think that, you know, a lot of us, you know, real estate agents specifically have gotten kind of a used car salesman rep. And sure. It's not, you know, we're not all like that. There's definitely some out there. I mean, I just had a terrible experience. I was trying to buy in a market that I'm not familiar with, that I'm not licensed in. I didn't have any friends who were licensed there. And I got one of those. I know better, you know, yeah. I got one of those agents, and I didn't realize it until we were well into negotiating the inspection that I was like, whoa, wait a minute. And I ended up terminating the deal just because I got so uncomfortable with being in a state that I'm not licensed in. And I just felt like, you know, I was going to end up with a bad situation on my hands. And I think that it's really important for all of us, whether wholesalers or agents, what have you, to make sure that, you know, we are doing our best to bring that ethics back to the forefront of helping clients, because most of us are not that used car salesman type. But I'd love to hear, you know, what your like core principles are when it comes to wholesaling, and how you're able to, you know, connect with those other people in the space to kind of be that go-to for the agents or for the sellers or fix and flippers.
Awesome. So, you know, first and foremost, with respect to the matter of price, right? I think that we have this understanding out there that, well, if somebody's selling to a wholesaler, they could have got more money. Not necessarily true. I have done many deals that failed on the MLS just failed on the MLS. Not only was the real estate agent unsuccessful, the MLS itself was unsuccessful in selling the opportunity. And I did better than what the MLS could do on the secondary market. So I have many examples of that not being the case. And I can argue till I'm blue in the face with agents about that, but it's absolutely true. A deal is a deal for the right person. And if you get a deal in front of the right person who has a great use case for it, they will pay for it handsomely sometimes. And so I do feel that if you have the opportunity to work with a wholesaler that has their fingers on the pulse of the investor market and has connections and contacts to the major players, you'll be able to get a better price. And that's something that we pride ourselves in at Keegley, is that we are always trying to come in at our highest and best, of course, knowing that we need to make a profit as well. But the seller understands that, right? They understand that. It's very clearly disclosed in my contract when I'm creating contract with a homeowner that I'm an investor. I'm in the business to make money. I may decide to fix and flip the house. I may decide to hold the house. I may decide to wholesale the contract. I could do any of these things. And I clearly state that in my contract so that a seller understands that. In addition to that, I will tell them, I don't believe in the bait and switch. I don't believe in pretending. I don't believe in lying to anybody. I think you have to be honest. And one of the things that we brought to the table with respect to the way that we conduct business is that, of course, the inspection period is there to protect what you're buying. And I have canceled deals before. That happens. But that happens all the time in any kinds of transactions. In fact, when you're talking about a retail deal, more of those deals, just the regular buyer getting a conventional loan, more of those deals cancel than the wholesale transactions that I've ever been in. A retail deal will cancel because of a financing problem, or I don't like the paint anymore. I went by the neighborhood in the middle of the night and there were weirdos there. Like, there's so many reasons why a retail deal will fall apart. And in mine, it's numbers. Right. Yeah. So if I get into the house and I see this, look, what you described to me or what I saw originally in the photos is not what I think I've got to do here now that I've come to the home and seen it. Of course, I'll give people an opportunity to give me a credit, but I am always judging my purchase based off of the condition of the house. And my profit doesn't come from the as-is value. I try to pay as close to 100% of as-is value as I can. Of course, I'm in business, so my job is to get a deal. That's what negotiations are for, right? So I'm going to do my best to try to get a good deal on a property, but not unfairly. I'm not coming in and trying to underprice a home by $100,000 or anything of that nature. And I think what ends up happening is you get these cases, these like few cases, one guy here in Atlanta, one guy over here did this over here, and one guy over here did this. And then these stories get propagated. And then people think, oh my God, they're ripping off grandmothers. But the fact is, right? That's what happens. And I can't believe how many times I've even heard David Green say it, you know, and I love the guy, right? But that's not the fact. And him and I have had healthy debates about it. And he understands and appreciates the way that I go about doing it because of the simple fact that if you're honest about how you plan to earn money on this and where you think the value of this property sits in its current condition, then the explanation of, hey, look, okay, yeah, this property could be worth $400,000 with a $75,000 or an $80,000 remodel, but are you going to do it? Because if you're not going to do it, then you have to know that the person who's going to come in here and buy this is going to need to make a profit. So either you take the risk, Mr. Homeowner, and renovate the home yourself and try to maximize your saleability for it, or leave that to the professionals. But if the professionals are getting involved, a profit needs to be made. And that's just business. And every business has a wholesale step-up model. I don't care if it's from, you know, hamburgers to the t-shirt you're wearing. Everything has a wholesale step-up model. If I look at McDonald's, for instance, and I looked at the fact that I paid $8 for a Big Mac the last time I was in there. Well, did that meat patty cost $8? Did the bun cost that? No, the sum of all the parts of a Big Mac don't come up to $8. At some point, that chuck was in a cow. Okay, well, let's take it from there. So they got to raise the cow. They've got to slaughter the cow. They've got to process it. They've got to package it. They've got to transport it. Then they've got to hire the high school kid to come and make it. And now they don't even have that guy in there anymore. Now they just got the glass screens. And so, but there's a step up as every time something happens to that patty, value got added to the transaction and it became more expensive. Well, the same thing is with housing. Okay. If I'm buying a hoarder house and this thing is falling apart at the seams, okay, well, I get the raw material for a better discount. And as I add value to it, meaning as I go out and find the investors that are the people who would buy this property and pay the most for it, that's the value I bring to the table. And my average profit margin per deal is about $10,000 to $15,000 across the United States. And I spend a tremendous amount of money building those networks and creating the systems and housing the people to do that. So, you know, from the standpoint of what value the wholesaler brings to the market, I think that just having the capacity to get out there and find those opportunities and connect to the people who want them is value in itself. And since I'm doing that in a way that I feel I'm giving the best price to the homeowner I could possibly give, and the reason why I work with real estate agents is for this purpose, because that person is the advocate for the homeowner. They can tell the homeowner, this is fair. Given the condition of what the home is in right now and how much risk and investments required for this property to get to a retail level, what this investor is offering you is fair. Now, we can go out to a few other investors and see, but I'm typically the highest and best at in those conversations. And so that's why agents keep coming back to me, because they're like, look, I've worked with this guy before. I know him. I've gone to OfferPad. I've gone to Opendoor. I've gone to this wholesaler, that wholesaler. And he tends to come in higher than anybody. We can still shop, but trust me, this guy knows what he's doing. And so for me, that relationship is very important, because I know that they trust that I'm going to come in with my highest and best. And I prove that. When they put me to the test and they shop me against other people in my business, I typically come in higher than everybody else because I've got a bigger network. And because I got a bigger network, I can sell to the buyer that's going to pay the most. And one of the other things that I do is I'm well capitalized. So if I come in and a seller says, you know what, I don't want the possibility of a cancellation. I need you to buy this. Okay, cool. Well, if that's what you need, meaning you want me to have no contingencies, I have to come in and be hard on my earnest money and close on the date promised. My numbers just got to adjust. It's what it is. And that's how it works in any business relationship, any business situation. And I love having the real estate agent there so that they can protect that seller. They can understand the contracts. They can understand all of the verbiage. They can understand what I'm doing. And that makes everything better because you've got an advocate there. You've got somebody that's paying attention and making sure that all the I's are dotted and all the T's are crossed and that everybody's protected in the situation and the conversation. And so for me, my number one lead source, because you asked, how am I finding the opportunities? My number one lead source is real estate agents. That's how I built this business, is connecting to agents, really having honest and deep conversations with them about the value that I bring, and then performing when they bring me the opportunity.
I totally agree with that. Real estate really is all about relationships. And I mean, I see it on my side of the business too. Like, we have done over 5,000 short-term rental deals for our clients.
Amazing.
And so, wow. Thank you. I appreciate that. So we have the largest and most experienced vacation rental firm in the country. And we've lost past clients in the past who had bought with us, who were ready to sell, ready to put it on the MLS, because, you know, maybe they sent us a text and we didn't answer immediately and somebody else answered faster. And they said, oh, you know, and I always ask, like, hey, you know, what did we do to lose your business? How could we have done better to have not lost your business? And they said, oh, well, you know, you just didn't get back to me fast enough. Well, the problem there is that we have a whole network of dozens of thousands of potential buyers that we don't even need to put it on the MLS. We've got those relationships that just because someone else answered the phone faster doesn't necessarily mean they're going to have the relationships to actually get the deal done for you. So right. I think that's really, really important, is relationships in real estate. And I think that a lot of potential, you know, people who are potential buyers don't understand that wholesale, well, because historically sometimes there's been a little friction there between wholesalers and real estate agents and how those two types of real estate people, I can't find my words right now, can work together harmoniously to make sure everybody gets what they need in out of a deal.
It starts with honesty, right? I think the reason that real estate agents tend to have an issue with a wholesaler is that the dude lied, right? Yeah. He comes in and he's like, yeah, I want to buy this, you know? And then it's like, okay, well, you want to buy this. All right. So what's your plan? I'm going to flip it. Okay. Have you done any flips before?
No.
Right. So it's like so that happens. Or they come in, and here's where it really goes bad, Avery. And I'm going to hurt some feelings when I say this one, but this is the truth. Real estate agent lied to the seller about what their expectation was and what they could actually do on sale price. Or the agent just didn't have the backbone to be honest with the seller and wanted that listing so badly that they just said, yeah, we'll list it at whatever you want.
Oh my God. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Whatever you want. And so they put this terrible listing on the MLS, completely mispriced, right? Completely mispriced. Now, wholesaler understands nothing at this point. He's brand new, just saw me or somebody on YouTube and was like, I need to do that. And so like they just understand the idea of, okay, well, the house needs to be in bad condition, needs to be needing a renovation in order for it to be a potential wholesale deal. Okay. I can visually see that by scrolling through the pictures. I'm not a dummy. They won't take the time to actually comp the house and see like what the ARV is, or they don't know how to do it, or they try to do it and they break every rule, right? They're crossing major roads. They're on the other side of the freeway. They're comparing two stories to single stories, historic homes to non-historic homes, a 2025 build to a 2024 build to a 1950 build. Like they're just breaking all the rules. Right. And so they can't justify any creation of value, but they go in and they offer the agent, you know, what they're asking. And the agent, they're like, oh my God, we found the sucker. Great, 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 great. So they quickly want to get this thing done. And so they're pressuring this wholesaler, right? Okay, all right, well, let's do this. You want to do this, right? Let's go. And then the wholesaler puts this out to a few of their buyers and people laugh or crickets, or people get mad at them, right? and then one of two things happen. Okay. The brand new wholesaler who's never done anything before, just ghosts, doesn't even pick up the phone.
I have had the ghost before.
Right. Just totally ghost. And you're in contract with this guy and he's like, ghost, like gone. Right. Yeah. They will, you know, do a few other kind of crazy things. Right. So they will wait till the last day of the inspection period and then come in and try to do like a $200,000 renegotiation, which is terrible. Right. Yeah. The last thing they'll do is they won't put in earnest money and they'll just kind of disappear that way too. And so the agent now has a damaged relationship with their seller because they had this deal taken off the market. They thought that they actually were able to get this price. And so now they've got a false expectation of where this house is going to actually trade at. And that's never good, right? That's never good for a real estate agent to have that false start on a deal, because it gave your seller an unrealistic expectation of where this property was going to trade at. And the market tells you, you got a house sitting on the market 80 days in original condition, you're overpriced.
Yes.
I'm sorry, but there's nothing else. You can tell me 100. Well, you know, it's this time of the year. No, it's overpriced.
Yep. Yeah. 100%.
It's overpriced. The market rejected your price. That's what it is. So until you come to terms with that, and until your seller comes to terms with that, you are overpriced. So yeah. I'll call you back in 20 days. And if your seller's motivated, then maybe we won't be overpriced at that point. We can come in and do a deal. But so these are the things, right? It's the dishonesty.
This episode of the Short Term Show has been brought to you by your friendly Short Term Shop real estate agent. We are hyper local and totally dedicated to your success. Whether you want to buy your next short term rental or sell the one you currently own, we would be honored to earn your business. We are in all of the best vacation markets in America. Find us at theshorttermshop.com. That's theshorttermshop.com. Brokered by EXP. This episode is brought to you by the premier short-term rental Facebook group, short-term rental, long-term wealth. We have nearly 50,000 members. This is the biggest independently owned and operated SCR Facebook group, and it has been curated by yours truly, Cashflow Carl. Join us on Facebook. Search the groups for short-term rental, long-term wealth. That's short-term rental, long-term wealth on Facebook.
The other piece is that agents don't even learn how to comp in licensing school. I was shocked to learn that.
Oh, there's so many things they don't teach you in licensing school.
They don't teach you how to. And so how can you really be a fiduciary for your client? Right. Meaning that fiduciary means that you are acting in the best interests of your client. How is that supposed to happen if your key product that you're selling, you haven't been taught how to value? How can you be a fiduciary that? So there's a massive disconnect in the education process of the real estate agent, massive disconnect in the process for wholesalers. And so that's why I have so many agents in my program. Because they're like, dude, I don't even want to wholesale, but you're so good at understanding value. And I just want to do more deals. I want to be a better investor. I want to be a better realtor. So I joined because I want to understand how to do this at a higher level. Right. And other agents are like, I just want to connect with other investors. And so I came in and I saw that you've got this massive crew of people that are doing deals. I want in. And they come in and they plug in. And I think that if you can work symbiotically with the investor world, real estate agents have had a hard couple of years. Let's face it, right? It's been tough. After interest rates spiked, it got really, 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 really thin. Inventory locked off the market. Sellers don't want to sell. It got hard. And so agents who did well by pivoting and adapting, you want to know what they did? They kind of bit the bullet and said, okay, tell me about this thing, this wholesale thing that you do. Hate it, but how do I get involved? And then finally they're like, whoa, that was easy. And so I've got real estate agents who are like, I don't know why I'd ever want to do another traditional deal again. So, you know, once you figure out your cadence, once you understand what you're doing and you do it transparently, honestly, and fairly, you can have a better experience for your homeowner, a better experience for the real estate agent, better experience for the investor, and everybody was paid.
And everybody was paid. Yeah, you're right. Everything you have said, I have 100% agreed with or dealt with in the past. And I think it's also really important, I think, as a buyer, especially if you're going to be a buyer coming in as like trying to wholesale a deal, maybe it's your first one, be honest with the agent what you're going to do if you're coming in and buying something that's on MLS, because there's nothing worse than somebody coming in and, you know, they've made this email address like at suchandsuchcapital.com and it's their first deal. And then when things start to get tough, then all of a sudden they're in, you know, they talk a really big game. And then all of a sudden they're like, wait a minute, I'm on a gas station worker salary. How do you expect me to do all these things? And they like, all of a sudden they turn into their real self because they're like, oh crap, I don't know what to do anymore. Like, I don't know how to get through this situation. So just be honest with what you're going to do, because that way, if you're honest, that honesty trickles all the way through the dealer, it should. And then everyone has realistic expectations of what could or might happen with the deal, instead of being surprised at the end with, I'm going to ghost, or I need 200,000 off or something. Just make sure everybody, you know, set expectations up front, like anything in business.
Right. Right. You know, it's, I think the reason why the dishonesty happened was twofold, right? So the folks who were previously on the internet teaching people how to do this business model taught it that way. They taught. And there's so many YouTube videos out there that I just cringe when I see them, but they're like, all right, don't tell anybody what you're doing. Okay. So this is how we get one over on the seller. So if we want to, I want to bring all the buyers, I'm going to just tell my seller, these are contractors. Okay. But they're not buyers, they're contractors. And so like, it's this whole song and dance of lies, right? It's all lies. And so don't do that. Just be straight. And if they don't want to work with you, because that's the other fear. The fear is, well, if I tell them what I'm doing, they're not going to want to work with me. Okay, cool. So move on. There's so many homes. There's so many houses. And here's the facts, is that at some point, I've had an agent tell me, pound sand. No, thank you. right? Okay, cool. But I never take that personally, and I never use that as a reason. I don't get in my feelings and say, oh, I don't like this agent anymore. I don't want to call him. No, it's not what I'm going to do. I'm going to call back in 2 weeks. I'm going to say, hey, you know, I chatted with you a couple weeks ago, and you know, I'm a wholesaler. I also buy and fix and flip. So it's not, I'm not only just wholesaling homes. I fix and flip houses. I have a TV show doing it. Like, this is also my business. But, you know, I fix and flip the best ones, and the ones that are, you know, maybe a little too far for me, or, you know, whatever, I'll wholesale those. And it's just my business. It's how, you know, how I do it. So I do come in and present myself as a multifaceted investor who will decide what my exit strategy is in during my inspection period. And that's factual. But if for you, it's not factual, don't say that. If for you, the only way that you're going to be able to exit this deal is by bringing in a deal partner or a funder or a buyer, then be honest about it. Just say it. At some point, the motivation is going to be high enough with this real estate agent and the seller to give you a shot. And that's what happened to me. My first agent deal that I did with Monique Walker here in Phoenix, Arizona, she's become my most lucrative relationship that I have. I do upwards of anywhere from 8 to 10 deals with her a month. And she first answered one of my phone calls on a listing that she had that was really, really terrible inside. Like, it was a maze. And I told her what I was doing, and she was like, well, you know, it's been sitting here forever, and I don't think my seller is going to have a problem giving it a try. So let's try it. Okay. So I contract it, and I'm unsuccessful, and I can't find a buyer. So on day 9, I cancel, but I'm honest about it the whole time. I'm keeping her in the loop about the people who I'm bringing through, what they're saying. Like, I'm like, man, nobody can get around this floor plan. It's really, really hard. I mean, the price is good, but the floor plan is just, they got to knock every interior wall down, Monique. I don't know that I'm going to be able to find somebody. So my first deal with her was the cancellation, right? But why did that turn into my most lucrative relationship? Because it was, I stayed real through the whole transaction. I was honest with her. So she gave me a shot on another house. Now, this next one that she gave me a shot on, she was like, it was a mansion. She has this 2-bed, 2-bath mansion in Phoenix, Arizona. And that normally wouldn't be a wholesale opportunity because it's a mansion. It's already got everything done to it that you could possibly want. And it wasn't selling on the MLS because it was a 2-bed, 2-bath mansion. Who puts 2 bedrooms in 6,000 square feet? That just doesn't make any sense, right? Very custom. And so she's showing it to me, and I'm like, I just don't know what the play is over here. And then finally my eyeballs go to the lot size. And I was like, it's 1 acre. And then I'm looking all around it, and I'm like, nobody's building acre, or nobody's doing anything with these houses on 1 acre over here. They're, all these acreages have been subdivided into 6 lots. And so what's the last acre sell for over here of raw land? And that's where I found the play. The last acre had sold for like $1.2 million at that zoning. And she's sitting on the MLS at 900, nothing. And so I asked her to do me a favor. I said, okay, I have to go directly to some developers on this, and it would be helpful to me if this thing wasn't just sitting here on the MLS collecting days on market. Can you temporarily take it off the market for me? Yes. Okay. She does that. Talks to the seller. He knows what's going on. He's like, whatever you got to do, do it. So I package it up and I present it as 1 acre of land, not a mansion. And I go to all these little boutique builders in my area that I know do this. And I sell it for $1 million. Homeowner gets their 900. I got 100 grand. I split that with Monique for her commission. So the seller didn't even have to pay her a commission. And everybody in that circumstance was so happy. And I outperformed the MLS. So having an understanding where my potential is and what the play is, I mean, that's the value, right? That's what we do.
Yeah. Yeah, man, that is a crazy deal. But that's a great example and a great segue into my next question of sometimes you have to pivot and like find the end of that yarn and like follow it to where it takes you and not try to force it to go one way. Sure. So what I want to ask you now is about your own portfolio and your own like personal business. So a lot of our listeners are new investors who are maybe they have 1 or 2 deals. Maybe they haven't gotten any yet. How do you build, so you've been doing this for 20 years, how do you build that longevity? Because I see a lot of people, especially now, because when I started, there were no gurus, there was not data, at least in my space, in the short-term rental space. Like, we just had to figure it out as we went. And now there's so many people telling you what to do and telling you what you should be doing or what you shouldn't be doing. So how do you cut through that and build a big long-term business? Because I see people are like, I'm going to do short-term rentals. No, never mind. I'm doing subject to, I'm doing car washes, and they never actually build anything. They just kind of hop around to whatever the buzzword is at that time.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's 95% of people, right? That's just, they're still, you know, lacking purpose, and they haven't really put their finger on what lights them up inside. So for me, I love doing deals. I mean, even though I have this big company, I'm still in text threads doing deals. I'm still comping houses. I'm still giving out buy numbers. I'm still, even though I don't need to, I've got so much staff that could take over all of that for me. I'd still enjoy that process. It keeps me sharp, and I like just being on the front lines of that. And so there's a few key relationships that I keep because it keeps me in the action, right? I think one of the keys to building a sustainable long business is when you start, right? I had the end in mind. When I started Keegly, I knew that I was going to build a wholesale operation that I could one day exit. That's, otherwise I didn't want to do it. I thought about what would this look like if I was able to do a deal in every major city in the country, and what could that company exit for? All right, now that I know what this thing looks like at the end, that's the vision. Let's work back and let's start with the first step, right? And so I got obsessed. You get obsessed with one thing, and I'm very routine, Avery. I'm so boring, right? Like people would think, oh, wow, he's got an exciting life. I don't. I'm so routine. I wear the same black t-shirt every day, so I don't need to make any decisions about what I'm going to wear. The biggest decision that I make about my clothes are what pair of Jordans I'm putting on my feet that day. That's it. That's all, right? Everything else is very routine. From the time I wake up, my friends and the people in my world know exactly what I'm doing at any given day at any given time on a weekday. They're like, oh, it's 9 o'clock. He's doing this. It's 11 o'clock. He's doing this. And it's because that's how obsessively routine I am. Right. And so it doesn't give me the luxury of then jumping from thing to thing. In fact, anxiety that comes from that type of behavior, guys, is so terrible for your nervous system because you're just showing yourself that you don't have consistency. You're showing yourself that you are as fleeting as the thought. Right. And if you've got 60,000 of these thoughts that go on in your head and you can't focus in a day and you can't focus any of them, then you're on autopilot straight up. Right. So that has to stop. Right. You've got to figure out how to get conscious, how to be a little bit more present. And then when that comes, you start finding joy in the doing. Right. Why are people floating from one thing to the next? You want to know why? Because they're not passionate about anything. They just know they want to be rich.
Yeah, you're totally right about that.
They're like, I want money, but I don't really give a crap about all these little things in here that are going to get me there. OK, then guess what? Neither will people won't give a crap about you. That's just the facts, because they can tell. Everybody can tell when you're passionate about something, when you care about something deeply and you're obsessed with it, so obsessed with it that you can become the best. And even if you're not the best, in your mind you are. Okay, well, that person wins. That person can compel. That person can last because that person believes it. And they're, you know, come hell or high water, they're not going to quit. And so the one who doesn't quit always wins.
Yeah, you're right. You just don't stop. And then you get there eventually. Well, that's really, really great advice. And I think that's a great place to end and just head into the last three questions of the show that we ask everyone. I'm very interested to hear what your answers to this are. So first question, what advice, if you knew then what you know now, would you give 20-year-old Jamil?
Oh, man. So 20-year-old Jamil was pretty lost. But if he wasn't lost, I'm not here. So I'm going to be a little contrarian. And what I would say is I'd go back and I'd look him in the eye and I'd say, you're exactly where you're supposed to be. Keep going.
Good answer.
Yeah.
Along the same lines. So What advice would you give a new investor with no doors who's looking to get started today? You were in the, I guess, Q2 now of 2024. So a little bit of a weird time in real estate. What advice would you give them?
Well, if you keep doing the thing that you've been doing, nothing's going to change. So if you've got no doors, no business, and nothing but knowledge and consumption of information, which is fine. But at some point, that has to stop too, right? At some point, you got to turn me off. You got to turn Avery off. You got to turn all these things off, and you got to do. It's really cool to get inspired, and it's really great to learn from people who know what they're doing and use that, take that. But at the next step is roll up your sleeves and take that first step. Fail miserably out the gate. In fact, be so open to failing that you may even expect it right at the start. And then if you don't, then wow, even better, because you did better than your expected fail. But really get, I mean, look, if this isn't for you, if it's not lighting you up, don't do this, right? You have one shot at this life, one, right? Go do something that's going to like make you smile. That's going to make you so happy that you're going to wake up and do this every single day. But if real estate, short-term rentals, whatever that is, whatever your thing is, if it lights you up, if you feel like, man, this feels so good, I love waking up every single day and doing this, then that success that you're going to get as a byproduct won't be the obsession. You're going to be obsessed with the thing that you're doing. You're going to be like, I just love playing with this Rubik's Cube. I don't care if I get all the colors right. I just love playing with this. I love the act of finding a home that I know will be a great Airbnb, and then thinking of the strategic reasons why, and then looking at the way that I can make the experience in this stay so unique that I can blow away all my competitors that are just regular homes, because I knew that this is hospitality, not property management. And when you do that, when you become that obsessed and you become that present and that intentional in the work that you're doing, people can tell, and they will find you, and they will do business with you.
All right. Very, very good advice. And last question, a little bit more fun. What's your favorite book that's impacted your mindset?
The Autobiography of a Yogi.
Oh.
Paramahansa Yogananda. That's a mouthful. But I've been on an interesting path, the last decade of my life. When I first got into entrepreneurship, I was struggling. You know, I had addictions. I was drinking every single day. I was lost. I was terribly sad and depressed, and nothing was working out. And, you know, one day I woke up and I read this book called You're a Badass, which was a great book by Jen Sincerno. So that would be my second one. But in there, she said, everybody that she knows that's successful meditates. And she's like, I don't know why, I don't know how it works, but they do. And so I download the Headspace app and I get down in this world, and it takes me in on this ride of self-actualization, if you want to, you know, give it a term. And Yogananda's book is one that I picked up along the way on that journey, and it changed my life.
Yeah, Howard Stern talks a lot about meditating. I'm a big Stern.
Yeah, he's cool. I like Howard Stern. Meditation is incredibly powerful. It, you know, there's so much science backing it right now. And there's so much that we still don't know that we have in the power of our consciousness and in our brain to be able to really control the things that are happening in our lives. Well, even if it's not so much as this, just controlling the things happening in our lives, it's controlling how we react to the things that are happening in our lives. And that takes you from a place of being a victim to a place of being in power. And for me, I want to be in control. I want to know that my life is my design. Even if it's, you know, this version of it, if I have control over it, and if I decided and I didn't let autopilot run the show, and I didn't let, you know, the news run the show, and I didn't let what president we have run the show. If I let, what does Jamil want run the show? Then I think I'm going to have a richer experience here.
Okay. Well, that nobody's ever recommended that one. So that's pretty cool. I'm going to definitely go put that on my list.
Let me know when you do.
I will report back. So, Jamil, if our listeners want to find you, follow you, join your community, how can they do that? Where can they do that?
You can find me on all the platforms. I'm on IG at JDAMJI. And YouTube is a great place because I create a lot of content there and I share everything that I've learned on my YouTube channel. People only join the Astro community for the other people in the community because it's so powerful just to come in and do business with the folks in there. But you can go to my YouTube channel at youtube.com/JamilDamji. Learn from me there. And then if I'm the kind of guy that you feel like you could listen to for a little while and take a journey with, then learn more.
Sweet. I'm going to sign up after talking to you for an hour. Thank awesome. You so much for coming Thank on, you, Jamil. Avery. We really appreciate it. And you guys go follow him and go subscribe to his YouTube channel. And Jamil, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you so much. I'm grateful to be here.